This episode of the Backside Ground Balls podcast is presented by The Performance Academy. For all of your athletic training needs, train with purpose at The Performance Academy. TPA houses a number of training resources from private baseball and softball instruction to team sports performance classes. Utilize advanced technologies like Output Sports, HitTrax, and TrackMan to take your game to the next level. On top of our elite staff and advanced technological capabilities, be a part of the TPA family and take advantage of the many resources our facility has to offer. We are super excited to announce that we are now partnering with Routine Baseball. For all of your clothing needs, athleisure, the sickest baseball gear you can get. We're talking hoodies, shorts, sweatpants, sunglasses, hats, any baseball style you can imagine. Routine Baseball has it, and we are now partnered with them. All you got to do is go to routine.com/backsideground ball. That's a mouthful, so I'm going to say it again. It's routine.com/backsideground ball and check out all the different options they have. You will receive 10% off your order today. One more time, routine.com/backsideground ball and get 10% off your order today. Want to go to a game? How about a concert? How about going to see classical music? Whatever you're into, there's only one place to get your tickets. And thankfully, we are partnered with SeatGeek, the essential resource for live events. For any of your ticket needs, make sure you go over to SeatGeek.com and use the code BACKSIDEGROUNDBALL to receive $20 off your first purchase. Again, that is SeatGeek.com, promo code BACKSIDEGROUNDBALL to receive $20 off your first purchase.
And welcome back to the Backside Ground Balls podcast. Super excited to be back here on the pod. My name is Trevor Powers, and I am joined by my co-host, Dan Galati. Dan, happy Sunday and weekend 10 across college baseball.
Yeah, what's going on? Happy to be here. Excited to be back on the pod. Miserable weather Sunday, but great college baseball weekend. So always something to be positive about.
Today was a loaded day. In college baseball, not in terms of like quantity of games, but when you talk about the action that was on the field today on Sunday, just flipping back and forth between Tennessee and Kentucky going back and forth, and then Virginia Tech and Duke going back and forth. And obviously we have a huge allegiance to our friends up in Blacksburg, so definitely disappointed that they weren't able to pull that one out, but that was a great game and they were trading blows back and forth with Duke. Wish they would have held on, but definitely a really fun day to just sit on the couch. And I had my laptop open because I had some work to do, and I did none of it because I was totally dialed in on those two games.
Nothing wrong with that, though, right? Like, that's what Sundays are about. Sometimes, you know, it takes you back to, like, the school days. You had homework to do. You had something, you had a test to study for, and then you'd end up having to cram at 8:30, 9 o'clock because there was, you know, NFL football or baseball, something on Sunday that, you know, just took your attention away. You thought you could multitask, watch, and do your work. It never actually happens. You just, you know, get that stuff done at a better time, maybe Friday night, stop going out with the boys, get the work done, you know. But that happens a lot. Nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, rainy Sundays, the only thing I want to do is kick my feet up, take a nice early warm shower, take my contacts out at about 2 o'clock and just sit there, read my book and have like crock pot doing the dinner and everything and just not have to do anything for the rest of the day. But that's not how today unfolded. But anytime it rains on a Sunday and it's a little chilly, that is like the default what I'd prefer to have on my Sunday. And I know I probably sound like a middle-aged woman with the things I just said, but you know, I have no shame.
Middle-aged woman or man.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be gender specific, but yeah, no, I get you. Rainy Sundays, they don't inspire a lot of motivation, but hey, we had a productive Saturday and you had a good weekend. Look, technically you are getting work done when you're sitting there watching college baseball on a Sunday afternoon.
That's true. That is true. That is completely justifiable. I mean, I flipped on the Capitals Rangers game on for a couple minutes, and I felt like I was like cheating on the clock. You know, I was like, I got college baseball to watch. I got a couple good games to be dialed in on. I got to be well prepped for this podcast tonight.
Playoff hockey is distracting,
dude. It's electric. There's it's nothing amazing. Like it is. It is the only thing that's comparable to like regional, super regional in college baseball. Like it's just rocking. People are taking it serious. Everybody's waving their towels. Like every hit, every moment, every shot is like huge. MSG was rocking today. There's no doubt about it. There's a lot of belief in New York about what the Rangers can do as the one seed in the East.
Yeah, I don't want to turn this into a hockey podcast, but I couldn't agree more. I mean, like you just like unfortunately, I mean Carolina, shout out where we are, the Canes. That place is always rocking. PNC gets
loud
and crazy. Man. Yeah, they looked good. Boston made me want to vomit, but the Leafs, you know, look like the Leafs in the playoffs. They're getting trounced. That place was loud. Winnipeg right now is on fire. They were down 3-2 in the first. I saw Scheifele tie it. That place just went bananas. Playoff. I mean, you're right. Like it's just the passion, the energy. It feels very collegiate when you get into playoff hockey.
So let me ask you this, college baseball specific, let's kind of swing this back into college baseball. If you could put a dome on any college baseball stadium to create the sound that comes with playoff hockey, what would be your stadium of choice?
Oh my gosh. The box is kind of like an obvious answer just because they are crazy, but you think about Mississippi State, cowbells indoors would be sick.
Arkansas, they pack that A&M. Place out and it's loud.
A&M would be cool. I mean, there's so many of these major.
Oh, could Tennessee. You imagine ball six indoors. With the indoors with the noise just freaking
reverberating. Some of these ACC schools, not to throw shots here, but not Carolina.
They're an outdoor school. They like probably need more berm and the more couch.
The couch. You put a dome over the couch. It would be pretty sick that we saw them get out. The super regionals there last year were awesome. There's a lot of good choices. Not Vanderbilt. Nobody wants to,
Nope.
We don't need to talk about that, but not
Vanderbilt. I would say in terms of noise, mine, I kind of go towards Texas A&M and then Tennessee are my top two that Tennessee I would want to put it to. Cool. They're both loud and when it's outdoors and when they play important games, like one swing of the bat, like that place is erupting. And everybody in
cowbells but inside would be sick.
That would be so cool. You're right. Definitely would be. And they fit 14,000 into those stadiums down there in the SEC up in our neck of the woods. It's more like 4,000 or 5,000. So like it's triple the amount of people. So like sound is definitely going to be big. So that would be kind of sick to have any of those in a dome.
One more honorable mention, the jungle that they got at ECU with a dome over it.
Yes. Put a dome and like keep like left field like it is and just have everybody out there grilling indoors. Who cares? fire hazards. Who cares? I think that'd be sick. Yeah, beer showers indoors. I feel bad for the janitor that's got to come in and clean the floors on Monday.
Yeah.
That'd be unfortunate.
Yeah, think about that. That'd be cool.
All right, let's take a trip around the country. We're going to talk a little bit about notable results, but we're also going to do a little mid-season check-in, so a little fired up about that. Dan and I have a couple of topics that we're going to pick some mid-season, quote-unquote. We're about a month away from conference tournaments, so we're going to give a couple postseason awards and predictions at this point in time. But in the important series across the country, we had Tennessee, who went on the road up to Lexington and won the series against Kentucky. Wake Forest won the series at home against Florida State. We're going to dive a little bit more in detail about those two series specifically. Duke went up to Blacksburg and took down the Hokies in a nail biter. Back-to-back, both games Saturday went to extra innings. Game three was won in the ninth on an A.J. Gracia home run. Man, does that kid have a nice swing, and man, does he have some swagger to him. Really interesting, Dan. Did you see the whole at-bat of Gracia?
I did see the whole at-bat, and I also saw I watched the whole at-bat back prompted by you on social media. I saw your commentary about it.
Yeah.
I think I have a gut feeling we're going to talk about him a little bit later.
Oh, okay. I like that. That's a little preview. Huge. And maybe it was Pollard. Again, we can't give too much credit to Gracia there. But for a freshman to be able to flush that bad call and turn around and hit a home run, but really good timeout usage by Pollard and having a feel and for the situation and making sure that he was calming down his freshman and keeping him focused. Coastal in a high scoring series that we didn't expect to be high scoring. That was the question coming into the weekend. Is this going to turn into a high scoring affair? And is Louisiana going to be able to trade blows with Coastal? Or is it going to be a pitcher's duel where Louisiana is going to kind of turn into their strength? Well, it turned into a lot of high scoring affairs, and Coastal came out with a series win against Louisiana. Arkansas, they kind of skated by there, 2-1 win, loss on Saturday, and a nice convincing win in game two of a doubleheader on Saturday in Columbia, South Carolina against the Gamecocks. Georgia Tech is third straight ACC series win. They're kind of playing good baseball right now. The Yellow Jackets are hot right now over Virginia. Wasn't exactly the best display for Virginia for the Cavaliers. They can't really pitch it, and that's starting to creep up with them when they play good offenses like Georgia Tech is. Oregon State swept by Cal. Pac-12 starting to take a little bit of shape. Some teams are starting to rise here, and Oregon State hit a little bit of a roadblock here. Georgia won the series at home against Ole Miss. In that series at home, Coach Bianco from Ole Miss won his 1,000th game in his 24th year as the head coach of the Rebels. Really cool speech afterwards that we reposted on our Twitter account, so go check that out because Coach Bianco is probably one of the best public speakers in the nation, to be honest with you. NC State with another big series win coming off a series win against Clemson. They take down the Tar Heels of Chapel Hill at home. UNC Wilmington, they go up north, brave the weather. Coming down south is a lot nicer down here in North Carolina than it was in the Northeast as they win the series against Northeastern. And then Kansas State sweeps Oklahoma State at home. Or no, they take the series. My apologies. They took the series at home. Dan, what are kind of your initial thoughts as we look around the country? A lot of close series, a lot of nail-biter games, a lot of ones that kind of could have went either way, but really good baseball on the whole this weekend.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it before we started recording. Like, home road splits are crazy, like just how these teams perform at home and on the road. And we had touched on that a few weeks ago when we were kind of getting into the meat of the conference slate of, like, it's just incredible. You know, and there's certain elements that go into that, but you just see it play out kind of weekend after weekend. And that's why, to me, it's so impressive when teams can go on the road and win big series, right?
Yeah.
It's just, like, huge because for whatever reason, and we've listed several factors that play into it, it's tough to do. And so when you can get that done, I also think it's fascinating. We spend a lot of time on here, and I think rightfully so. They're the two strongest conferences for sure this year, talking about the ACC and SEC. But just, like, looking around the rest of the country right now, specifically Pac-12, Big 12, like, week to week, man, it's so hard. Like, we come off, and you didn't even hit it here, I don't think, in the recap, but, like, we come off last week, and I was, like, kind of, you know, J.J. Weatherholt was back for West Virginia. They had a big series win against Central Florida last week, and you're like, starting to kind of, like, pay attention to West Virginia. They get swept by Texas Tech.
Yep.
It's just, like, these conferences outside of those, the ACC and SEC, it's kind of it's hard to figure out who's who because, again, you would think, you know, you were thinking or feeling like, okay, Oregon State's one of the top five teams in the country. They're going to walk with the Pac-12. They get slapped in the face this weekend.
Yeah, and Cal's a good club. There's no doubt about that. But
for sure.
Oregon State, I think, is – not playing consistent enough baseball. It's kind of sleepy time out there out west. So nobody's really paying as much attention as you'd probably think. But dropping that, getting swept by Cal, it's not exactly what you'd want, obviously, in the thick of Pac-12 play. And we'll talk about it on the road series specifically. That's what makes what Tennessee did so impressive. And I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to call people out on social media. But there's some people that just take this stuff too serious, I guess, is the biggest thing. Take series by series too serious. And I saw somebody say that, like, Kentucky should be embarrassed because they were Billy Amick ground ball booted away from being swept. And it's like, and we'll talk about this, but I didn't see anything this weekend from Kentucky that doesn't make me believe that they can very well compete for a national championship. I actually walked away from this weekend of Kentucky way more impressed than I did coming into the weekend. So, like, if we want to say that they should have been swept at home, sure, but, like, I think it's more of a credit to what Tennessee is as a club and what Tennessee is as an offense. But I was really impressed with Kentucky. They could have just as easily won the series as well as that one unnamed person on social media claimed they could have just lost the series. But it's just one of those things where it's like, if you don't ride this emotional roller coaster of what college baseball is, you can start to see that obviously teams struggle a little bit on the road. And that's what makes Tennessee's series victory so impressive. And again, we're going to talk about the details of it, but just kind of like an initial surface level analysis there.
Yeah, I just think, and I feel like this is going to probably become a theme tonight a little bit too, just in our conversation, but like perspective is so important. Like you just said right there, like just how you set that up was perfect. It's like, yeah, you can take that. You can come away from that thinking like, oh, this was Kentucky's chance to really put their name on the map. They had Tennessee coming to town. They can, you know, if they win that series, you know, you're really legitimately putting a stamp on your season and saying, okay, we're here and we're like for real. On the other hand, you lose a series to whoever you're talking about's point, a booted ball away from getting swept. You can call them embarrassing. Or, hear me out, you can look at those two teams and think, those are two legit contenders. You know, this is my takeaway. Like you said, these are two legit contenders. Kentucky was in those games. They were a couple things away from winning that series. And credit to Tony Vitello in Tennessee, who year after year after year, come the end of April, just like we tell you everyone is trying to do, they're playing their best baseball this time of year. Couple weeks ago, they ended up winning the series, but a couple weeks ago, they got dog walked at home on a Friday night by Georgia. Since that moment, it's been a different Tennessee ball club. Like they have just handled business night after night, weekend after weekend. So a lot of it, like just the perspective with and the scope for which you watch this. If you want to be negative about it, you could pick at these kids all day long, or you could just kind of look at the other side of things. Because as me and my brother always say, when people are hard on superstars in sports, the other guys are trying to.
Yep. 100%. And I think, again, we don't have to get into the weeds of it, but it's just one of those things that when you look at college baseball as a big picture sport, because really it is. I mean, we're talking about Oregon State getting swept by Cal. Does that necessarily mean we couldn't be sitting there on June 15th, just to pick a date off of random? And Dan and I are streaming Oregon State College World Series game on our iPhones at an unnamed person's wedding. Like, who the heck knows what's going to happen at that time of year when we get to that point and we're in full swing of Omaha. But you mentioned it. You teased it a little bit. You teased our conversation. I'm excited for this. Thought it would be a little bit of a fun conversation here. We're going to do a little mid-season, I guess three-quarter season. We're about a month away today from the start of conference tournaments, the big conference tournaments, the SECs, the ACCs. We're probably a little bit closer for some smaller conferences. So right now we probably have a pretty good sense of what teams are which and who's going to be there at the end of the year and who the best players have been this year. So we're going to go through a couple of our backside ground balls awards, for lack of a better term. We're going to have our Omaha 8. We're going to have our Golden Spikes Award winner. And we do have a caveat there for all of our listeners. Well, that one was easy. The Transfer Portal Edition of the Year Award. It's a new one. Free Agent Spending Award of the Year. Freshman of the Year. Coach of the Year. Team underperforming that we thought was going to be better. And team that has surprised us the most. So, Dan, your choice. Do we want to start on Omaha 8 or do we want to go a little bit random here?
Let's go random. That's all the right, hardest then. One, in my opinion.
The Omaha 8?
Yes.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. So let's start with Coach of the Year then. Give me your Coach of the Year, who it is, and why you believe said person is the Coach of the Year.
Look, I'm going to go with a Paisan. Nick Mingione. I don't want to mess that up as a Paisan, pronouncing another Paisan's last name. Kentucky's 32-7 and 15-3 in conference, and I don't care who you are. The majority of people, you and I included, did not think that Kentucky in a loaded SEC would be sitting at the top of the SEC. And even after this past weekend, looking like one of the best teams in the country, a top five team. We're talking about legit contenders. And again, depends on your perspective of how you watch these series. I think they validated their position this weekend.
Yep.
Sure, they lost a home weekend.
They have four more really tough weekends to finish out the year. They're going to have to continue to prove it. But up until this point, for you to say Kentucky is in single-digit losses, three conference losses in the SEC, which has just been a gauntlet and always is and is probably the strongest conference in the country, the job he's done there, it's been incredible. And I just think that as a team, as a whole, you know, obviously you can only do so much as a head coach in baseball. You're not calling plays. You know, your game planning is a little bit different. A lot of it has to do with your horses. But I truly do believe, just from, you know, the little bit of experience that I have, a lot of times those guys take on the persona of their head coach. They take on, they, you know, you set the temperature, as Jalen Hurts says, be the thermometer in the room, right? Or the thermostat. Be the thermostat, not the thermometer. Set the temperature, right? And that's what a head coach does. And that really is like the biggest thing that a college baseball coach can do. And those guys go out there, they play with a ton of confidence. They don't care what anyone thought they should be. They don't care what anyone expects them to do. They go and they believe every single day that they're the best team on the field and they're going to go and handle their business. And, you know, we kind of outlined it when we took did the preview for this weekend, talking about their offense and how it's like, it's not superstars. It's not full talent-laden. It's an offense that has an identity. It's an offense that every guy kind of has to do their part in order for them to be successful. And it's kind of the same thing on the pitching side. And they do that. And they do a really good job of it to the tune of the year they're putting together of being a legit contender for Omaha. We're talking about hosting regionals, hosting super regionals in Lexington, Kentucky. You know, it's a baseball school.
Yes. Well, I mean, we didn't plan this because actually Dan and I did not get each other's answers. So this is not intentional, but Coach Mingione, big fans over here at the Backside Ground Balls podcast. Love to get on campus and sit down and have a chat with you because you did a nice little between inning interview and you look like a guy who has some juice and definitely would be a great conversation to have. I also tagged you in a tweet. So if this gets to you and I know you're listening to the podcast on your Monday morning commute, a retweet would be nice or at least some acknowledgement because, you know, we had a little feud in Lexington a couple years back where Mark Stoops and John Calipari had a nice little pissing contest over whether it's a football school or a basketball school. I think you're proving that it's a baseball school out there in Lexington and that's where the money's going to be had. But watching that offense and watching this team this weekend, because quite frankly, nobody's really sat down and bared down on Kentucky because they know the gauntlet's coming. So everybody got the opportunity to sit down and really dive into what this team's all about. And again, coming into it there, they'll move a runner, they'll run, they'll bunt for hits and things like that. I saw an offense that was dynamic. I saw an offense that had a pitching staff worried about them running. I saw an offense go poolside homer, hit a couple of homers through the game to hang with Tennessee's offense because they had a ton of homers too. Christian Moore had three and specifically, and Kaveris Tears also had one that was a rocket. And you know you're going to have to go toe-to-toe with that offense. And I saw an offense in Kentucky that can go toe-to-toe with them. I saw an offense also go two-run jack and then bump for base hit the next one. And again, we talk about this all the time, whether it's college football, whether it's baseball. When we've talked to hitting guys in college baseball, you want to be multiple, right? If the wind turns and it starts howling in when you're playing the most important game of the year, you can't rely on long, lazy fly balls that happen to get out because balls and bats are juiced right now. No, you got to be able to win. You got to be able to go out there and win a ball game. And I truly believe that this Kentucky team can win in any environment. And if you put them in Omaha, with this offense, the dynamic nature of how they win games, I think they're going to be better suited to win games in Omaha than they are in Lexington. I get the home field advantage thing, but spacious outfield, being able to play the game the right way. And it's just a team that does the things the right way. They made a couple defensive miscues that led to runs for Tennessee today. But again, I just think this club, and the reason why I don't think anybody was so high on it, I mean, you're talking about Nick Lopez, and Dan, I don't know if you've checked how many schools Nick Lopez has been at. Four schools in 4 years. Welcome to the transfer portal era, fellas. But he's having a great year. Ryan Walshman, the transfer from University of Cincinnati. Nicholson's the transfer from University of Cincinnati. They've been able to put it together with like a little bit of a transfer portal group and getting these guys going. And it's been really impressive. And what they've done offensively is really awesome. So Coach Mingione, we'd love to come down to Lexington whenever you want to walk us in. Welcome us in, open the doors, and would love to check out your facilities and sit down and talk to you. But congratulations on the Backside Ground Balls midseason coach of the year. We hope that through these next 4 weeks where you guys play a lot of tough games that you continue to play great baseball, because we'll be rooting for you because we love what your club's got going on. All right, let's go to Golden Spikes Award. Who do you got for your Golden Spikes Award?
You lead off. I got lead off last time. You lead off.
Just all right, because I'll lead off. It's pretty obvious here. It's pretty obvious here. Both of us are going to pick Charlie Condon, right? Correct. End of story. No questions about it, right? So we're going to pick, use the caveat here of who would be your Golden Spikes Award winner had it not been Charlie Condon. So my choice, Travis Bezzana. Travis Bezzana came into this year. He was highly regarded coming into this year, no doubt about it. Had a great season in the Cape, and a lot of people were excited about what he was able to do. Travis Bezzana spent all offseason at Driveline working on his bat speed, and he showed up, and he has 19 home runs this spring. And again, in college baseball, where Charlie Condon has 26, Brady Montgomery has 22, Jack Caglianone has 23, you might be like 19. That's just kind of standard. This is a guy who had 17 coming into the year in a career. He had 11 last year. On top of that, he's hitting .439. He only has 16 strikeouts with 47 walks, Dan. 47 walks. I mean, he's just as dynamic as they come. And Condon's going to make, they're both going to make a lot of money. Condon's probably going to be penciled in at one, but I think Bezzana might be the guys that pro organizations might be more desirable. And because of what he's shown this year, being arguably the best player in, and if he wasn't on the West Coast timeline, we'd probably talk about him a lot more.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. I mean, and he's been kind of unbelievable since the start of the season. And it's leadoff bombs. It's setting the tone for them. It's just so good. And I had him kind of as, you know, one of the three names outside of Condon that I had written down. I'm glad you went with him because he deserves the love and he deserves the attention. And like you said, the fact he's on the West Coast, he doesn't get as much attention as he does. You know, you see a ton of highlights of his, just terrible press box camera angles. You don't even get good center field cam of his swings. Everyone, we're going to get that here in a couple weeks when we get to regionals, which I can't wait for, because just being able to see him more at non-ridiculous times from ridiculous camera angles will be a lot more fun, and he could go 1-1, like you said. So he's a good one. This was tough for me. I figured you were going to go Bezzana here. Look, Jack Caglianone is unbelievable, but I'm not picking him. I'm biased. I'm a pitching guy. Everyone knows it. I'm going with Hagen Smith. Okay, Arkansas doesn't have the offense this year. They're led by their pitchers, and their pitchers are led by the dude who punches out the world. I'm talking about 83 Ks in 41 innings, a sub-2 ERA. He only has 14 walks in those 41 innings. He's absolutely disgusting. He's my number one pitcher off the board if I was into doing draft stuff, which I'm not. That's your job on this podcast. So hopefully you have him as the number one pitcher off the board as well. It's from the left side. It's disgusting. There's a million comps that you could make for him. I see you doing it in your head, whether he would be your number one pitcher off the board, whatever. That's fine. He's mine. It's from the left side. It's like, it's Carlos Rodon, it's Blake Snell, it's Randy Johnson, it's whoever you want to comp it to. If he can throw the secondary stuff four strikes consistently, he's going to be a big leaguer in a hurry, because the fastball is 98 when he gets it inside and he can land the slider. It's a nightmare for righties. It's a nightmare for lefties. The attitude he pitches with, I think he is truly the leader of that staff. He's the reason that, to me, I'm still so comfortable with Arkansas moving forward throughout the year, even though they don't have the offensive firepower that we see in today's college game. Like, it's kind of crazy to think about. In my mind, like, I'm so confident in a team that doesn't have that, because the college game has become so much about power and gaudy offensive statistics. And here's Arkansas, who kind of has middle-of-the-road numbers for today's game, and it's led by this dude. And it's just unbelievable what he's been able to do. You know, it's tough for pitchers to win the Golden Spikes because you only pitch once a week. I understand that, but this is a podcast and I'm allowed to give it to whoever I want.
Yeah, 100%. I'm not going to sit here and disagree with you. You said we have biases and we all have biases. Your lefty bias is showing up right there. So that's the only thing I'll say with that. Let's head to team underperforming. Let's get a little negative, even though we don't like to be negative here. I'll kick this one off. Mine's the Horned Frogs out of Fort Worth, Texas. We had our good friend on the podcast, Frog Preacher down there, who covers the team. So we definitely stay in tune, Jamie Plunkett, and he's a great follow on social media for anything TCU, and he's the best. I mean, when we have him on, we talk for longer off air than we do actually recording content. But this was a team that we were high on. This was a team we were high on when they were 12-0, and it just hasn't been as consistent and good. Now, again, this is the same team. We're sitting here April 21st. What's the question whenever we talk about TCU from last year? What was the turning point? What happened? What happened on May 1st? What happened that series against Texas? They just played Texas this weekend. They just lost that series. But Coach Sarluz and company, they figured out a way last year to do it. I don't know how many times you can fight with fire and still make it to that end goal of Omaha and playing for a national championship. But the talent is there. They added Peyton Tolley. Obviously, Cole Klecker hasn't been great this year. They have the offensive guys that are really impressive and really talented group. There's a reason why they were top three coming into the year. But this team has not played as good as we've expected them to. The opportunities are still ahead of them. But TCU is my team that I expected to be a lot better that is massively underperforming right now.
Yeah, disappointing. Just because I really liked that group. I liked the start they got off to. Me and you sat here like dum-dums and talked about them being the best team in the country going into conference play, and it just fell apart. Like we joke about the backside ground balls curse. That's about the worst we've done so far. Let me ask you a question. If you could say there's one school in the country that I like to dunk on any chance I get, who would you say it is?
Florida.
Okay, my underperforming team is Florida. Right, you are. I mean, this team, look, all jokes aside, and I do love dunking on Florida. Shout out Marco Wilson. Shout out Dan Mullen. Shout out Todd Grantham. You were national runners up last year. You come back, you have an unbelievably talented roster. You bring in a guy like Colby Shelton to stick in the middle of your lineup. Jack Caglianone has only gotten better from what we saw last year, where he kind of, you know, was the charmer of college baseball. I know you lose a big leaguer in Wyatt Langford, but again, bringing in a guy like Colby Shelton to stick in there to kind of seamlessly transition the middle of your order. You recruit just about better than anybody in the country. You were right there. So many guys on this roster tasted it. You'd think you'd have a little bit of hunger. You start the year with a 9-5 loss to St. John's, and you just continue to sputter. We joked about the 2-2 weeks every, you know, all year long, and it's now transitioned to worse than that. You know, they can't win a series. They can't win an SEC series at this point. They salvage one against Vanderbilt. They've gotten blown out twice by Florida State. I don't know what to say at this point. And they have to go to Fayetteville. They have to play Tennessee. They have to play Kentucky and then Georgia to finish out their conference play. They're barely over 500 as a team. They're 20-19. They're 8-10 in conference. This team is, I don't care what you say, this was a top five team that kept them in the top five for as long as they possibly could, even though they were dropping midweeks because they're winning conference series to start conference play. This team's way better than what their record is. They should be way better. I don't know what's going on down there. You know, all jokes aside, this team is way too good, way too talented. Caglianone's been really good on the mound. He hits a bomb every single day. Just set the record was 9 straight games with a homer. The kid's unbelievable. It's big league juice. He's hitting the ball over the scoreboard, and they can't win games that they need to. And a lot of it looked like they didn't take games seriously. They would only show up when they felt like they had to, and that is just the most dangerous game you can play because at some point you're just going to get comfortable, and being comfortable is never good, especially in the SEC when you know every weekend is going to be a grind.
I'm going to ask a fun question, then I'm going to say something serious. If you had to set an over-under on how many doubles Jack Caglianone had this year, what would your gut tell you it should be?
Without going into the year?
No, right now. Like if I just told you to
think he has?
Yeah, like blind, like knowing the hitter he is, what would you set an over under as for doubles he has on the year?
22.5.
Doubles?
Yeah.
He has 2.
That's insane.
And 0 triples. He has 23 extra or 25 extra base hits, 23 home runs, two doubles, zero triples. When he gets them, they only go out. Nuts. Crazy thing I found out today doing some research. Would,
like, and the reason, like, how hasn't he miss hit balls?
I don't know. They either get like out, they either spin. Get out, or they, yeah, they either like, yeah, something. I don't know. They either get
there's
out.
Something
or,
in the swing you could look at there, right? That tells us that.
Probably, definitely. It's just grown man strength, for lack of a better term, as well. And also, what happened to Florida's pitching?
That's the my real question.
Like, what no, happened not just Florida? This year, right? Like, I mean, we see Hurston Waldrop go to pro ball. He's obviously been really good and highly regarded with the Atlanta Braves. Brandon Sproat's a third rounder for the Mets. He's been really good in the minor leagues, and a lot of people think he's a fast riser. Why aren't these guys that throwing 100 miles per hour? Why aren't they performing in Gainesville? Who's responsible for that? How do you recruit at that high level and consistently not be able to churn out first round talent? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that, but that's the biggest impediment from Florida in a national championship this year and last year. Quite frankly, if this team had a good pitching staff, they'd be the number one team in the country, and we'd probably be putting money on them to win the national championship because they're the most talented combination of offense and stuff on the mound. But their pitchers do not perform to what they're expected to perform to, and in terms of talent, in terms of stuff, in terms of capabilities, and it's really something that has held them back over the last couple of years. And this is a program that churned out a stretch of Jackson Coar, Brady Singer, AJ Pock, Dane Dunning, like just one on top of each other. Like it was just like ace, 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 ace. Who do you need? And I don't know what happened to it, but they need to find that again. I don't know if they need to make changes pitching wise in terms of their development, but something's not going right now.
And it's one of those things. And that's why, like, again, I think that's what makes them so frustrating to me, is because I know all these guys are better than that. Trevor Cade Fisher, Liam Peterson, and Brandon Neely are all flirting with 7 ERAs.
It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. What?
Sevens.
I guess the only whether it's correlation or causation, I guess, is going to be the biggest thing. The only thing that's changed over the last couple of years has been the change in that ballpark, and the new ballpark plays small. They turn that thing around and the wind gusts out. But that is the only thing I could wrap my head around of like not much has changed. Coach O'Sullivan's been there for years. They've recruited at a high level. They're still doing things the same way, from what I understand, in terms of recruiting. It's obviously something on the developmental side. I don't know. Let's be more positive here. Team overperforming what your expectations were this year.
I have three, and I really don't know which one to go with. I'm not going to say Kentucky because we already talked
about Coach
Kentucky
of the Year, is. Self-explanatory, 100%.
I'm going to go Texas A&M here.
Okay.
I'm going to have an honorable mention when I'm done just for my own fun here. But I'm going to go Texas A&M. You looked at Texas A&M. You knew they were going to – look, Texas A&M, we thought they were going to be good. They have a head coach who's been there, done that. They seem to always be –
always does it.
You know, in Omaha. Like, I get that. But it seems like year after year, they're kind of top 10, back half of top 10, top 15, and then they get hot at the end of the year. They straight up just look like – we talked about it. I think they're the best team in the country. They look like the best team in the country. They do it all. They hit. They pitch. I mean, the pitching staff has been – that's what kind of has been the biggest surprise, I think, for all of us, is how well they've thrown the baseball this year. We talked about it a lot on the last pod. They have been – they've been outstanding. And, again, I didn't think we'd be sitting here talking about – like, you look at it and you looked at A&M's roster and you thought – best case scenario, maybe they would be a top five team, top three. I didn't think it would kind of be like starting to separate themselves at the end of April as the best team in the country, but that's where we find ourselves. So for me, it's A&M. And then just real quick, shout out Wes Johnson. I mean, Georgia, first year in there, they're playing much better in SEC. Obviously, they have Charlie Condon. What he's done for the pitching staff, he lost a ton of guys. He turned that roster over completely. The pitching is still their weakness, don't get me wrong. But they're finding ways to get outs and get wins, which is something they hadn't done really in a long time, and they needed something fresh in there. I think he's done an outstanding job in his first year, a hire that was kind of questioned a little bit, to be honest, and he might not have been their first choice. But he's gone in, and he's done so far. I think if you're a fan like I am of the Georgia Bulldogs, I think it's exciting to see what's going on in Athens. They're definitely trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I think that Georgia is a ticking time bomb in this sport with their location, proximity to Atlanta, and obviously everything that comes with that. And then on the Texas A&M point, I think what makes this team so why we probably weren't expecting them to be as good is because two of their top three and their three-headed monster are both new additions to the club in Braden Montgomery and Gavin Grahovic. So I think we all knew Jace LaViolette and we knew Braden Montgomery's addition would be huge, but how huge, right? He was really good with Stanford, but was he great? Was he spectacular? That's a conversation. So, and we'll talk a little bit more about Braden Montgomery. Don't worry. Team overperforming for me, Florida State, nice. I think that, you know, coming into the year, we knew the potential. We knew Cam Smith was a guy that a lot of people in draft circles were high on. He had a great Cape Cod summer, so he came in with a lot of helium. But he didn't have a great year last year as a true freshman. James Tibbs is another guy at the top of the lineup. Daniel Cantu is a guy that he hit a home run against Wake Forest this weekend, and I think it was our friends over at 11.7 tweeted that he looked mad running around the bases, and it was the grand slam off of Michael Massey, and he did. I love the maroon on maroon. Like, those jerseys look so good. Like, those jerseys look really good when they wear those and rock those on the road. And then obviously on the pitching side, like the two-headed monster, and Leiter needs to come back and be healthy, but what they've gotten out of Jamie Arnold has been true ace level stuff. Like, he's truly competing for, you know, being the best pitcher in the country, and you're getting both of those guys back. This is a young club. Now the problem is they lose Tibbs and Smith to this year's draft, but they bring back Leiter and Arnold. Take the good with the bad there. Obviously, you're going to lose guys every year for the draft when you play at Florida State's level, but if they got those two back, and they can run it back with this club, because again, this is Link Jarrett's second year, right? We talk about this with a lot of coaches, how long it takes to kind of establish depth. That's what makes what Coach Backage has done at Clemson so impressive. This is Coach Jarrett's second year there. He built Notre Dame like it was a contender, and we see what Notre Dame's been since Coach Stifler's gotten over there, and I have nothing but respect for Coach Stifler, but it's a hard job to win at. And Link Jarrett had him rolling. And first off, what a freaking awesome name too. Link Jarrett. God, guy was born to coach baseball, it seems like. But what they've done in 2 years, we're going to talk a little bit about them and a little bit about the questions that come with them. But they are definitely a team that is overperforming up to this point. All right, let's head to, we got two more and then the Omaha 8. We'll finish with the Omaha 8 here. So let's go to freshman of the year. I think I know where you're going to go. So do you want me to go first or do you want to go?
Go ahead. I'm very curious as who you're going with.
I thought this was easy. I thought it was between two people. I thought it was between Gavin Grahovic and Drew Burris. And I did a little bit of stat analysis to what Drew Burris has been in comparison to Gavin Grahovic. And it's actually like light years of a difference. Like, Drew Burris has been one of the best players in the country, and he hasn't hit as many home runs. I mean, he was sitting at 15 after like 25 games. He's now sitting at 17 through 38, but he's still hitting .383. He still has 12 doubles. He's still drawing walks. He has 33 walks as a freshman, only 30 strikeouts. It's just really impressive what this kid's done. He's a dynamic talent. It's lightning quick bat speed. Georgia Tech plays small. It's a hitter-friendly group. They develop hitters like it's no tomorrow. And he's the best player on an offense that's really good. And he's a guy that, I mean, we're going to be talking about Drew Burris a lot for the next 2 years. It really feels like when Dylan Cruz stepped on campus and lit the world on fire as a true freshman, that it's just like, how good of numbers can this kid put up? Can he hit 400 with power? Can he hit 450 with power? Like, when Dylan Cruz was flirting with this, like, the sky's the limit of what Drew Burris can accomplish in college. And it started this year. And obviously he actually got back on the home run board this weekend. He'd been a little bit on a dry spell since for a while there. So good to see him back raking. But again, to see him stacking knocks, like, I think when I checked after 3 weeks in the season or something like that, he was at like a 75% extra base hit rate. Now he's at about a 50-50, which shows that, like, he might not be hitting the long ball and might not be hitting the doubles that he hit early in the season, but he's still getting his knocks because he's hitting .383. So as teams have adjusted to him, he seems to be adjusting, and you know he's going to catch that second wind of like, oh, I'm about to get white hot and I'm going to go chase the freshman home run record.
Yeah, I think that's a really good answer. I think, like you said, you probably thought it was obvious here, but I'm going to, again, it's a podcast, so I can say whoever I want. This is a guy 100%. I actually got to see in person for the first time last week. And man, is it impressive. Now, I'm sure if I got to see Grahovic or Burson in person, I would probably name one of them. But I haven't. So I'm going to go with AJ Gracia because I got to be front row behind the dish watching him take at-bats against Gardner-Webb on Tuesday. And he's just so impressive. The way he swings the bat, I mean, you can just tell, and I hate to sound like a movie here, but it's different. Like when you watch him launch the bat and go into his swing, it's violent. It's quick. I love the setup. He doesn't look like a freshman. He's not built like a freshman. He doesn't walk like a freshman. He doesn't take at-bats like a freshman. And he slid a little bit. He came out of the season. Everybody remembers 3 homers against Mason, and it was gangbusters. He had a big weekend against Wake. It was huge. April 7th, he went into the last game of their series against Miami hitting .355. He's down to .308. I understand that. He's had some struggles, but he's slugging .532. He's 1-1 strikeout to walk, which is extremely impressive to me. Today, he snapped his 10-game homerless streak. He's up to 10 bombs. I think there's, like, by the time his career is said and done, 10 bombs is going to be the floor for him, right? He's going to be a guy that we're talking about 20-plus pumps a year, especially in this kind of environment of college baseball. Again, those other two, like Drew Burris, Grahovic, like, there's a ton of guys. I got to lay eyes on this kid last week, and it's just really impressive. It's one of those guys that you just see them, and like right away you're looking at them, and there's some big boys in that lineup, but you just see this kid, and it's just like, oof, like it's just, he's special, and he's going to be, you know, he's going to be a guy that's going to be a lot of fun to track as he continues in his college career.
AJ Gracia has 10 home runs on the year, as you mentioned. 7 of them came in 3 games. Wild.
Yeah. Young kid.
Transfer the new era of college athletics, transfer portal edition of the year. Who do you got?
I'll say it, and then you can launch into why. It's Braden Montgomery.
Braden Montgomery has been the best player in the country, and that was moved by transfer portal. I mean, there's actually a legitimate argument for him to be the best player in the country. I mean, you're talking about a switch hitter. This is one of the things that gets mistaken because he's so good from the left side and he takes so many of his at-bats from the left side, but he's currently sitting at 22 home runs, 11 doubles, a .376 average, a .906 slugging percentage. .906. That is unreal. Be able to do that as a switch hitter, the consistency it takes, the SEC, it's a slight step up from the Pac-12 in terms of competition. He was a great player at Stanford. He's a spectacular player this year at Texas A&M. And yes, there is a difference. You're talking about a guy last year that was like .350, 17 bombs, .650 slug, .906 slugging percentage, 41 walks, only 30 strikeouts, doing it as a switch hitter. It's unbelievable what he's able to do. It's so cool. Honorable mention, the normal Chase Burns, right? Pretty good addition there. And there's definitely some other guys, but I got to go with, it's hard to get past Braden Montgomery before you circle anybody else.
Yeah, this was the easiest one for me, I think.
Yeah. All right. Let's go one for one here. Omaha 8.
I like it that way. I like
that. All right. I'll take the first one. I'm going to assume that you have this on your list. Texas A&M.
Yes.
Texas A&M. All right, you give me one of yours.
I'm going to go Arkansas.
Arkansas. I also have Arkansas on my list. I'm going to go with another one. So we have two. We have A&M and Arkansas for both of us.
Correct.
Tennessee.
Agreed.
Okay. What do you got?
This might be where we get off the rails.
And let's see it.
I think this is where it gets really hard. I'm going Clemson.
Clemson. I do not have Clemson. I have... And I'm in no particular order here. I have the Demon Deacons of Wake Forest on my list. Wow. Okay. Why do you have Clemson? Let's hear it.
Again, like I don't, I'm not, I think the ACC is so hard. I think I have, let's see, So just when I was going through this and writing this down, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams that you could convince me, and I wouldn't blink if you told me that they went from the ACC to Omaha. The ACC is going to get more than one team, I would imagine, in Omaha, just looking at the rest of the field and making some assumptions there. Clemson continues to win baseball games. I can't explain it. I really do think, however, when you get to the end of the year, I think they have enough guys offensively, enough guys that are scary. They will be hosting regionals. They will be hosting supers. We know the ball flies out of there. And depth on the mound matters. Frontline guys that can shut you down, obviously, number one, huge, especially when you get to Omaha. But we're just talking about getting there. Clemson has enough to win a best of three, out bullpen your butt in a hurry, score enough runs. And they can just they can go guy out of the bullpen, and that can help you win. Coach Backich gets them to win games. I will tell you this: I had Wake Forest kind of in the mix here, so I don't hate it. I see where you're going. How do you not like it? I mean, I would say I think I had Wake Forest. Yeah, I had Wake Forest on here at 7. So
okay. So, and again, mine was in no particular order, so that was not necessarily like Wake could have been on the bottom there.
Oh, sure. I'm gonna rebuttal. I just wrote that
little, 7th. Oh, gotcha. I'm going to rebuttal a little bit on my concerns for Clemson. You're right. Depth wins when it matters most, but you can't tell me that you wouldn't be worried about getting length from your starting pitching when you have to play potentially 5 games in a weekend, right?
No question.
So I think that's where my concern goes, is because they seem, even whenever they play really high level teams, they seem to get punched in the face first and claw back, right? Yes. Instead of setting the tone with a high level ace. And I think that's why I'm so high on Wake's chances to get there, because it's like, dominate your regional. They're going to be in a position to host. Dominate in a super. They have the 3 best starters in the country in terms of the combination of stuff, potential, and potential earnings in the future of being MLB draft picks. And then you combine that, and the next thing you know, you blink and you're in Omaha just because you got length out of your starting pitching and your worrisome depth doesn't creep up. And you can roll guys back out like a Falco on Friday and Sunday. And you can roll a guy like Cole Rowland out there for 2 straight days, whatever you want to do. And you can get your best guys on the mound more when maybe in conference play you aren't able to.
Does it concern you at all that we've sat here and all we've talked about is stuff and potential? They have the best 3 starting pitchers in the country, and it's April 21st, and we haven't seen them pitch like the best 3 starting pitchers in the country.
No, because I just trust that. Like, we've seen it before with high levels, like Florida last year. Like, when Cags, Waldrip, and Sproat last year got rolling, they made it all the way to Omaha, and they were bad through the whole year. Right. Like, okay. It's just a matter of like Chase Burns continuing to do what he does. Josh Hartle continuing to improve. He struggled a little bit. Michael Massey's been the one guy that's been like probably the best. He just hasn't given any length. Yeah. And then he gave up the grand slam and 5 earned on Sunday. So obviously not his best start. But those 3, again, like, probably hanging my hat on them. So I'm going to go again here. I have Florida State in.
So do I.
Oh, nice. Kind of like the fact that high-level starters, again, we've mentioned that when I kind of started to trend in that direction. Because, again, if you can get depth out of your starting, it kind of exposes your – or kind of allows you to avoid exposing your weaknesses and just what comes with that. And that's what Florida State has. I mean, this weekend – and, again, we're going to talk about it a little bit in detail if we even have time – their depth was exposed, but they were also missing 2 potential weekend rotations. So those are guys that are going to be there hopefully come June. And that's going to be the difference between at least 1 win. I mean, they very well could have swept this weekend. They blew a lead on Friday when Jamie Arnold outdueled Chase Burns. They obviously had a chance. They won on Saturday, and then they blew a lead again on their second game Sunday or Saturday as well, that they had a lead in. So they had leads in all 3 games, potential win. You'd hope that they'd get out of there, but the high-level talent is what gets me there. Who do you got? I think this is where it's going to get weird.
Yeah, this is – okay, so that's basically my – that's my field, and now it's a bunch of – I just need to pick on the spot here. I'm going to give you – Oregon State. Okay. I'm going to give you Oregon State just because I think they're going to get a decent draw. I think they're going to be able to host – they're the best team in the Pac-12. I feel like it's like kind of every year, like we saw it with Stanford. Like, they're kind of this year Stanford. We don't know what they truly are. They have some weird weekends where they get swept by a team like Cal, but then they're playing out on the West Coast through regionals and super regionals, and next thing you know, they're in the field of eight. It almost feels like, well, we need – it almost feels like every year it's like, well, we need someone from out there, whether it's a UCLA getting in, whether it's a Stanford getting in, and it's a team that, you know, people like you and I who don't want to stay up that late, we don't get a lot of eyes on them all year long, and then next thing you know, regionals come around, they're, you know – bashing their way into a regional and kicking the door down into Omaha, and then we kind of get our best look at them at that time of year. So I'm going to go Oregon State here. I don't feel great about it, but there's like at this point my list is kind of getting like I've
no I feel great about my choice. That's going to go hand in hand with yours. You're right. There always is somebody from the West Coast, because as much as they want to say it's a true basketball March Madness level, it's kind of randomized, you can go anywhere in the country, they do it regionally. So West Coast teams always play in a regional, and there's a super regional out there, and they get paired up like that. I'm going with the Arizona Wildcats. They are 14-1 in their last 15 games. They're good friends of ours, 2 degrees of separation from being partners of ours with our good friends at Kinetrax and our friends at Kinetrax. They use the Kinetrax system. And they've been absolutely rolling. They're playing great baseball. They're playing the best baseball throughout the year. They struggled, but 14-1 in their last 15. I'm going to take a team that's playing good baseball. They're doing the right things on the mound, and I'm super impressed with what they're doing, that I think they could end up hosting A and then squeaking through. Next thing you know, they're in a super regional with a favorable matchup, and next thing you know, they're the team in Omaha. We've seen it happen with Arizona when Coach Jay Johnson was there.
I love that. I don't think you're necessarily wrong. Because you did that, I'm going to step really outside the box here.
All right, let's hear it.
And I think I know the path. They might have to knock off one of the teams I've already named, but I think I know the path. I'm going to stick to my guns when we did this last week. I'm going ECU.
I have them as well.
I think they're going to have to win a regional where they host and UNC's the 2 seed. And I think that's going to be unfortunate, but I think they can outlast them. I think they can get the win. I don't know if they're going to have the – like, again, I just stood up on the box for Clemson here and beat the drums for them, talking about their pitching depth. ECU doesn't necessarily have the pitching depth, but they have the first round pick in the first game, and anything can happen. Again, I just like the way ECU looks. It's about time they make it there. They've been too good of a mid-major for too many years now. And the way it kind of feels like a wide open year, we've talked about it. The way we've had shuffling at the top all year, they've just been consistent. They win series they should win. They win big midweek games when they come across their schedule. So I'm going Purple Pirates.
I love that. I think they're in a position, the best thing that's going to happen to them is they're in a position to host a super regional, right? Because everybody else is beating each other up. They are going to be in a position to host the super regional, and that's going to be the best advantage that they could ever dream of as East Carolina. If they can get a home super regional, me and Dan are going to be in the trees out there and left swinging from the rafters with our Canon cameras getting fired up on a Friday night with the super regional before we head up north for, again, an unnamed person's wedding that happens to be during Omaha. I don't know who that would be. Obviously selfish. Not a podcaster. So for my 7 right now, I'm going to read this off before we go into my 8. I have A&M, Tennessee, Arkansas, Florida State, Arizona, Wake Forest, East Carolina. My last team, I know you're not going to have this one. They just came off a series loss. I have the Raging Cajuns out of Louisiana.
Stop it. Pitching. I got ULL.
Pitching puts you in a position. Brain. Pitching puts you in a position to win important games. They aren't going to have to go to the band box that is Coastal Carolina, hopefully, for a regional. I wouldn't imagine that it's going to happen. They're probably going to be in a position to play in Lafayette, at least for a regional, if they're able to host. I don't know what the capacity is. They're going to have to go on the road for a super. They're not going to have to go to LSU, because we know LSU is not going to be hosting a regional this year or a super regional. They're going to be in a position where I don't think they're going to get a favorable draw being a team from the Southeast. They're probably either going to have to head to Texas and potentially end up at College Station regionally, or potentially one of the three states, whether it's Alabama, Mississippi, or one of those across the South. But this team's pitching staff, we talked about it last episode, really good.
I think our Omaha's a lot of fun. If you give me Louisiana and ECU both in Omaha, and there's always one. I mean, there's always one. We saw it last year. There's always going to be a couple teams that come out of nowhere. They get hot at the right time, and that's so much about it. Like, you know, Skipper always said this. Our guy from Goldie Beacom, Tom Riley, who is the best, always says the best way to get to the World Series is be in a regional every year, and then the ball will bounce your way eventually, and you'll get there. Yes. And that's how you do it. That's how you get to a World Series. And that's, you see it all the time. Like, if you are just consistently there, ask Jim Schlossnagel, if you're just consistently there, you're going to wind up in the World Series eventually. And he does it consistently. And that's kind of how I feel about ECU. Like, it's just like you just consistently show up and you're there. I feel like Louisiana, this is their year. It's open. Like, think about all the times, and I would have to go back and look, but, like, who dominates Louisiana? They're not going to have to go to the box. They're not. Nope. Like, this – like, walk through that door. Like you said, you have the chance. They will give you a regional. You're going to have the chance to host it. I would hope they don't screw you out of that because the pitching staff is deep. Bounce back from this weekend against Coastal where you had to go up to the Myrtle Beach International Airport up there, and that's tough. You, like you said, you won't have to be there in regionals. You won't take this opportunity, run with it.
And the boys got caught in a Hard Rock Cafe on Thursday night and had a couple too many drinks.
It's tough. I don't blame them.
Broadway at the beach.
One too many good men do it. It sucks you in. Lost a lot of good men down there in Myrtle.
I really thought I had you with the paper pop. When I was about to drop Louisiana.
We have the same brain. That's why this podcast isn't as good as it should be.
We don't argue enough. At each other. I should have told you that you were an idiot for picking Clemson. I guess. That would be, yeah. Clemson would be the one that I disagreed with. So.
And I disagree with your
win. Your disagreement was, let's hear your Omahaite. So mine was A&M, Tennessee, Arkansas, Florida State, Arizona, Louisiana, Wake, and East Carolina.
So no order whatsoever. Can I give it to you in no order?
Yes, of course.
Well, actually, I think I could probably give it to you in order if you wanted me to. But A&M, Arkansas, Tennessee, Clemson, Florida State, Oregon State, ECU, Louisiana.
Gotcha. Fun activities. Well, we're sitting here at an hour. Shocker, Dan and I talked too long. We didn't recap the series that were this weekend, but I think we did in passing enough, and we kind of hinted at some of the results that were. So, Dan, any closing thoughts on any of the series across the country, but maybe two of the big ones in particular that you wanted to get off your chest before we log off and let our listeners enjoy their Monday afternoon / evening, depending on when they're listening to this?
Yeah, and I was going to kind of get into this if we had gone deeper, so I'll just hit it quick, and I had hinted at it earlier. Like, this weekend to me was all about perspective. Like, if you want to be a Kentucky fan and a Florida State fan or critic in this case and just say that Kentucky could have gotten easily swept in this series and Florida State had a chance to, you know, another big series, they went on the road. We saw them lose at Clemson. They go to Wake Forest, a team that's struggling, but it would have been a marquee win because it, you know, it kind of looks like Wake is rounding into form. They could have went and kind of shut that down and solidified their position in the ACC, and they didn't. You can do that. Go ahead. I, for me, am going to take it like this. It was a positive for all four teams in this weekend. I think Tennessee continues to prove that they're one of the three best teams in college baseball. Tony Vitello continues to do a fantastic job. And trust me, I don't say that lightly. I don't say that lightly. If you know me, it's hard for me to compliment the guys that wear that color orange. But it's hard to deny at this point. Every year at this time, we're talking about a Tennessee team and we're talking about how they are starting to look really, really good. So I think that was a great series win on the road. We've talked about how hard it is to go on the road in college baseball and win series. Tennessee did that. If you're Kentucky, you hung in there. You could have easily won that series. You could have easily taken all three of those games. They were fantastic games. You've proven that you belong. You've proven that you can be standing at the end and you could win the SEC. You can win regionals. You can win supers. They're one of the best teams in the country. Same thing that went on in Winston-Salem. Wake Forest needed that series win. Go handle your business. Find a way to get it done. And I love that they didn't do it just relying on their starting pitching. They won games that they weren't supposed to win, and they did it late, which we haven't seen them do all season long. Because when they have been winning, they've been playing front runner because they've gotten a great start. And Nick Kurtz has hit a couple homers. We saw that happen in Virginia Tech. They pretty much front run that whole weekend off the backs of great starts. That's kind of how they're built. Okay, but everyone knows if you want to be a complete team and be a title contender, you got to find multiple ways to win. I think Wake Forest proved that with the fact that, like you said, Jamie Arnold outdoes Chase Burns. Guess who won that game? They win on a walk-off wild pitch late to win the series. Those type of things, those type of games, Wake Forest needed to prove. And if you're Florida State, you just went up there and could have easily won 2 or 3 or swept without 2 starting pitchers. You should feel great and you should feel confident walking out of that weekend. If you're Florida State, they might have some depth concerns on the mound. We've known that, but I think they've proven that they can stick and they can play.
Yeah, I think that the silver lining for me with Florida State is you look at 5 at least of their losses, right? Or maybe it was 4. Let's just say 4 because they kind of traded blows on that Friday game. Clemson, they went up early and then Clemson pulled away. So 4 of their ACC losses, both the series between them and Clemson and them and Wake Forest, you could make an argument that those 4 losses were all blown leads by bullpen arms. And I think that that could be cause for concern. Yes, 100%. But you're 1 good weekend away from those breaking right. You're 1 finding roles and finding out what's going to work best for these guys breaking right from being, you know, having only 4 losses on the year, or maybe you go 2-2, having only 6 losses on the year. This club's really good. Like, there's no way around it. Do they have depth concerns? Yes. Yes, yes, yes. But so does every team in the country almost, right? Like, most teams have some form of pitching concerns, depth, whether it's starting rotation depth or whether it's bullpen depth outside of maybe Arkansas. But if you start to find those guys in the right roles, you start to get them in the right situations, you get your starting rotation healthy. I mean, I had a hard time not picking all 4 of these teams for Omaha. I just didn't want to be like I was completely recency biased, but I walked away from this weekend thinking Kentucky can win in any environment. They can win against any team. They can go toe-to-toe with anybody. They play with a little bit of swagger, which I like, and I like offenses that are multiple because we talked about this, when the wind turns and it starts blowing in, which it rarely does in the SEC, it seems like, they can win. Right. And obviously Tennessee we're very high on. I'd like to see them get AJ Russell back because I still have concerns about their starting rotation, especially when you talk about getting to Omaha in the spacious outfield. And obviously Wake Forest is kind of turning a corner and there. But again, Wake Forest is lucky to come out of this weekend with a series win. You take the wins where you get it. They have a lot of wins ahead of them. Let's just put it that way. They go to Notre Dame next weekend. They play host to Western Carolina, and then they welcome in Clemson to round out their season, I believe. And then they go to NC State to finish the season. So there's definitely wins to be had over the next 2 series. So they're going to have to stack those and start playing really good baseball. But I know that club's heading in the right direction. But I was super impressed with all 4 of these teams. I think Kentucky showed enough to be a legit contender. I think Florida State showed enough to be a legit contender. It's just a matter of playing your best ball come late May, early June.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's all about perspective, how you want to look at it. All 4 of these teams should come away, you know, feeling pretty good about what's going on. And we talk about it all the time. Relievers are volatile. So like you said, and I just got done saying, how do you get to Omaha? Guys get hot, ball bounces your way. Florida State gets a couple guys with confidence in the back end of that bullpen. Those all turn to wins.
Especially when you recruit at a high level and you know they have talented freshmen or talented arms somewhere in that bullpen. Just get them throwing strikes. Get them figuring out what they need to do.
Are you surprised that we did not mention Vanderbilt at all?
I mean, they are the pirate ship ride at the St. John's Festival. Like, oh, they are.
God. You just dropped St. John's? Oh, woo. Take
it's
it.
Getting late. Right, it's late here on a Sunday.
For a second what you were talking about.
But it's one of those things where it's like they play – I mean, what do we take out of this weekend? Is Florida bad? Is Florida good? I don't know. But Vanderbilt seems to really struggle when they go on the road outside of LSU. But then they've had certain weekends where they just get beat up. Like, they've had weekends where they get beat up, and then they have weekends where they play good. I don't know. I mean, like, again, does that mean they could run into two good weekends in a row in a regional and a super regional, and next thing you know, they're in Omaha? Of course. That's with any team, though. LSU could do that. Like, sorry to break it to us, as much as we don't want to talk about LSU anymore. Like, LSU could do that. Florida could do that. Like, there's so many teams in the country that right now don't have a number next to their name that could do that same exact thing. But yeah, I'm a little bit surprised. I had a hard time because I wanted to be creative enough with making this Omaha 8, but I thought the top was obvious. And then I just think it's a hodgepodge of about like 25 to 30 teams that I think could be there. And Vanderbilt falls in that group. I mean, anybody. I think I considered Alabama, even though they haven't played great outside of their weekend against Arkansas. Like, just because I think they have good starting pitching, and their worst pitcher right now is Ben Hess, who's a guy who's really highly regarded. If he starts to figure it out and stops pitching to a mid six, you stack those guys up with Greg Ferrone and Ben Hess and whoever they else they have going on that starting rotation. Like, they're good too. And they swing it. Like, and they score. So like, there's a lot of teams out there.
I'm just going to real quick, and then we can get off here. Vanderbilt's next nine games. Yeah, I'm sorry. Tennessee Martin, 3 at home against Mississippi State. Tennessee Tech, 3 at Georgia, home against Louisville. I would like them to win 8.
It's going to be tough. Georgia's really good at home. Getting Mississippi State at home, I would envision that Vanderbilt's going to come out on top on that if I had to pick one. But going down the road to Georgia has been kind of a how, like, the only reason Georgia's ranked right now is because they win home series. Like, that's it. Like they literally, they go on the road and they get beat up, and then they come back home, and it's like, oh, there's another series win for Georgia. So they win at home. They don't, like, so I don't know. Like I said, if they do win 8 of those next 9, maybe we do this exercise again with 2 weeks left to play of who obviously we're going to get our predictions come postseason time. Maybe they are that team at that point, but right now I have a hard time seeing it.
That would leave them at 37-12 and 15-9 in conference with 2 conference weekends to play, 3 with Tennessee and 3 with Kentucky. You'd feel good about them going into this. That's tough. That's a tough last 2 weekends. That's why I gave you those 9, and I would like to see 8 of those 9, because then you got those 6 to
end. Yeah, because if you go 3-3 through that, you're probably happy.
Exactly.
Well, as I yawn before, I thank all our listeners for tuning in, as that will conclude our episode for today. Make sure you're subscribing to the podcast on all podcast platforms, including Apple Pods, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcast. Make sure to check out the YouTube page. We just dropped a really cool video, a behind-the-scenes look of the pitching lab at Virginia Tech. Dan threw a baseball. He got on a force plate. We got to break down some TrackMan stuff. It was a really cool experience. Coach Kyle Saracen, Director of Player Development down there, did a great job filling us in and getting in the weeds with us. We post episodes bi-weekly, always hitting your feed in the morning. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at BacksideGB, Instagram at BacksideGroundBalls, and TikTok at BacksideGroundBall. And most importantly, this is the non-negotiable for me. Make sure you share it with 5 friends. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And we'll see you next time on the Backside Ground Balls podcast.